You're listening to Masters of Web 3, presented by Transact. Join your hosts, Sammy Start, Transact co-founder and CEO, and former CNBC Money journalist Megan DiMatteo, for an exclusive look into the stories behind the world's most well-known Web 3 startups. Each episode, we will interview the high-profile founders, developers, and innovators building the world's most widely adopted blockchain protocols. Hear the highs and lows they've experienced along their journey from the people behind the tech that's changing our world. Let's get into the show. Make it as easy as possible for mainstream users to buy crypto within your decentralized app or wallet. Onboard more users to crypto, handle higher transaction volumes, improve conversions, and increase revenue through a simple developer integration. To learn more, visit transact.com. That's TRANSAK.com. Vanina, welcome to Masters of Web 3. It's so good to have you.
Thank you for having me, Megan. The pleasure is all mine.
Would you like to take a minute to introduce yourself? You are the Chief Marketing Officer at Ambier Wallet and Ambier AdX. Would you like to take a moment to explain the differences between those two parts of the company and share a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely, I would love to. Ambier is a company that started out of necessity. The team and I were working on a different product, a video aggregation platform called Streamio. We tried to monetize it via advertising and tried multiple different ad networks. Unfortunately, none of them was good enough for our standards and for our requirements. So in the end, we figured, why don't we build an ad engine ourselves? Back then, blockchain was beginning to gain momentum. We were looking for a technology that would help us solve the major issues of the ad tech industry, the biggest one being the lack of transparency in the supply chain management of ad sales. And we figured, why not? This also gave us an opportunity to do a crowdfunding campaign and raise funding for this project. And that's how we started building Ambier AdX, the company was called AdX Network back then.
Okay. And what year was this?
That was 2016. We started planning the whole shebang. And and in 2017, this day, 5 years ago, actually, we're celebrating our fifth birthday this week.
Well, happy birthday.
We consider the date of the crowdfunding campaign the birthday of the company, though the planning started much earlier. But 5 years ago, we got on this crazy roller coaster and started building AdX Network. And then later on, we were living, breathing, sleeping blockchain and crypto. And we were using various wallets every day for different things, personal, company use, you can imagine. And again, the same pattern occurred. We were looking for a product that was up to our standard, up to our requirements. There was no such product on the market. And again, we figured we have the team, we have the know-how, why don't we build it? And that's how we started building Ambier Wallet, which is a non-custodial smart crypto wallet. And when we started doing that, we realized that it's time for our rebranding. We had planned it and the moment was ripe for that rebrand. So we transitioned from AdX Network to Ambier, the company building Ambier AdX and Ambier Wallet.
Wow. Okay. Well, thank you so much for that. I'm a visual person, so I'm getting this like image of like the umbrella company and then the two different essentially prongs coming from it. So thank you for that overview. That's so helpful. And you know, I always come to these conversations worried that there's not going to be enough to talk about. And then there's always like just in what you said gave me like a thousand questions to ask you because I'm so interested. The first thing I think that's noteworthy is just that you've been working on this for 5 years, you know, happy birthday. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm so glad that we scheduled the podcast on your company's birthday. That seems very fortuitous.
Indeed.
And also, it's important. I think every developer, every builder, every founder in the Web3 world understands that people have been working on this for 5+ years now, in some cases 10 years, in some cases longer than that. But I think it's just important that the general public takes a moment to really recognize that with all of this like crypto hype and crypto euphoria that's going on, the companies that are becoming successful in this space have really seen the light now for many years, and they've been working on these solutions. And so it's just important to kind of note that, but wow. Okay. So go
indeed.
Ahead.
And something that I would like to mention here, and I find it, I wouldn't say peculiar. I mean, this should be the status quo, but it is not the case with most companies. The founding team of Addicts Network, now Ambaya, is still the same, and the core team is still with us. We have been adding more and more people to the team, but the people we started out with have been with the company throughout bull runs and bear runs, throughout the crypto winter, throughout so many technological developments. And I think that this is one of the things that makes a company and our product so great. We are, as a team, a well-oiled machine. And we are such a tight-knit team that collaboration and teamwork is very, very natural to us.
Yeah. Well, I want to actually go into that deeper in a bit, about how you met your founders and what it is that you attribute to your success. I think even just friendships and relationships, I think, cycle through phases, and sometimes they last 5+ years and sometimes they don't. So I would really love to know kind of what the secret is to having a well-oiled machine and a team that works together for 5 years through thick and thin. But before we dive into that, maybe you could tell me just a little bit about your background. You know, you're the chief marketing officer, and I think you're the first CMO that we have that we've had on the podcast. We've had you're a founder and a CMO. We've had founders and developers more on the technical side. We've had, operations people. But it's interesting that you're on the marketing side of things. And Ambaya started from this place of advertising, and now there's a wallet. Okay, so I'm trying not to ask you 3,000 questions at once. So maybe, first of all, tell us a little bit about the relationship between a decentralized ad network and why that creates the necessity for a wallet. And then maybe also talk about coming into Web3 from a marketing perspective, and what kind of decentralized ads even really means, for marketing-minded people.
Absolutely, absolutely. I just want to make a remark. While I am a founding member of Ambaya, I'm not one of the founders. Our founders are Ivo Gurgiev and Dimo Stoyanov, a fantastic team. Well, my background, as you said, my background is in marketing and advertising, traditional digital marketing mostly. I started out as a copywriter, moved on to managing copywriting and content management teams, transitioned into more strategic marketing. And the industry that I have worked have always been challenging industry. I started out in the gambling industry, moved on to fintech, financial services, then moved on to cloud storage. And from there, I got into crypto and blockchain. And for us marketers, one of the biggest challenges that we have faced since the dawn of digital advertising has always been measuring results, measuring returns on investments and marketing spend. And in order to measure those results, we need to have a very solid reporting by the networks and the systems that we use. And in the general case, these systems would be the big ad tech companies, Facebook, Google, Amazon, Bing. When it comes to them, there is reporting. It's very, very detailed to the point where it's deliberately confusing. And it's all often very hard to navigate this reporting. And if you're spending large enough budgets, which I have always been in the lucky position to have, in all
that
the
is a very lucky position.
It is, you know, it's difficult to do marketing with no money, and it's very different when you have, you know, a few million euro at your disposal per quarter. So when you are spending this type of money, you kind of want to double check and you kind of want to verify. It's not that we don't trust Google, but we don't trust Google. So
and why is that exactly? Like, is it just because Google has its own interests, right? There's a vested interest in it maintaining the propriety of that data.
Well, the facts of the matter is the business of Google is not serving ads. It's selling and reselling data and personal information, user information, so that other companies can sell and resell ads.
So it's not necessarily curated for your needs necessarily. Okay.
Exactly. I mean, it is targeted so that you have the highest chance of making a purchase. But at the other side, on the other side of that deal, you have an advertiser who is also monitoring the people making the purchases. So if you're spending smaller budgets, it's harder to notice. But if the budget is large enough, and if the cost per acquisition of a new customer is high enough, then you start to notice the discrepancies in the data. And you start seeing a certain number of conversion, i.e. sales or signups or downloads or whatever, reported by Google on one hand, and then a different number of those conversions in your back end on the other hand. And when you start digging, yeah.
Okay. So it's kind of like, it's not that you're necessarily... Yeah, it's like you have a large enough sample size to really contrast to the information that you're getting from Google. I understand now. Okay.
Exactly. But that's obvious even to smaller advertisers, even smaller companies with budgets that they really struggle for have the same issue. They face the same issue because at the end of the day, if you have the huge budget, you usually have an account manager. You're lucky enough to have live support with the traditional ad tech companies. And when you reach out to them and you start digging, the answer that you get is always, well, you probably didn't install your tracking properly. You probably didn't do your account, campaign settings right, yada, yada, yada. There's always an excuse. They will come up with a billion different excuses to avoid the question, why is there a gap between the data that I'm seeing in my internal reporting and the data that you're providing to me. And this is how you actually, when you sit down for weeks and crunch the numbers, you figure out that there are this money missing. And this money, at the end of the day, if you manage to get a straight answer, that's great. But that money goes to hidden fees that are dug so deep into the terms and conditions and your agreements with the ad tech provider that it's very, very hard to notice them no matter how experienced you are. And those fees can be up to a third of your budget. With a smaller network, these can be even more. So at the end of the day, you are pouring those giant, giant budgets, believing that all of the money is going towards your actual advertising budget and expecting to see results based on this amount of money, but you're actually paying a third of that in hidden fees. That's that lack of transparency in the ad tech process that I mentioned earlier.
So this is all so interesting to me because I've spoken to other folks in the Web3 world whose biggest concern is consumer privacy and consumer sovereignty over their own data. And you're coming at it with a similar critique of lack of transparency, but it's from the marketing side of things because when you're trying to use the data, you're not sure how to best use it because you don't understand exactly the nuances and like the ins and outs of how it was collected. So where do you see decentralization kind of solving the marketing pain point? Because I've heard about decentralization solving the consumer privacy pain point. You know, if consumers own our own data, then we have more agency over how it's used, how it's shared, who sees it, when they see it, and who's compensated for it, right? Like we can, if we tokenize our data, then we can essentially be compensated for the way that we choose to share our data with the Googles of the world. But from a marketing and advertising perspective, how does decentralization offer a solution to you?
Well, one of the biggest pits of money disappearing in advertising is the one of false clicks and false impressions, ad fraud, and the creation of the illusion that an ad has been seen or clicked. But that ad is not reaching a real person that is interested or potentially interested in that product or service and could potentially become a customer. And there is absolutely no way to verify that on traditional ad networks. If you're not using a blockchain-based network, there's literally no way. Again, with the bigger networks, you get a report that says, we're going to reimburse you for this amount of fake clicks, but do you really know if that's the right amount? Do you know why you got those clicks, et cetera, et cetera? These are questions that we don't have answers to. And we blocked.
Are those clicks bots? Are they robots? Or are they like spammers or like, I don't know.
Could be anything. They're usually mostly click farms. Scripts, bots. Sometimes these are bored housewives clicking on ads to get a fraction of a cent so that at the end of the day,
they may not be guilty of clicking on ads that I don't buy. Oh, okay. But you're talking about people who are doing
About people who are being promised money just to click on the ad. So these are not really these are not prospective clients. They don't match the profile, but they sit behind a screen and they click the ads and they get paid for that. So the way we solve this is it's not a very straightforward way. It took us a while to get there. But the way we kind of solve this is through the so-called payment channels. We came up with a payment channel system that translates each and every impression on our decentralized ad network to a micro payment on Ethereum. So basically, first of all, that's great for publishers who broadcast the ads because they can get paid per impression in real time. And second of all, because every impression is a micropayment and it's logged on the blockchain, it could be verified at any given time.
Wow. That sounds really complex.
Not to me, but I've been doing that for 5 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, the thing is, if you know how to read the blockchain, and even if you don't, I mean, we do provide advertisers and publishers with detailed reporting, but say for some reason, our internal reporting within Adex malfunctions, or God forbid, we decide to lie to people, this is data that is verifiable because it is on the blockchain. And at the same time, because it's a layer two solution, it's also scalable enough to be able to process multiple ads per second and not be slow.
So you said that Ambire is a layer two solution, which helps with the costs of those transactions. Can you talk a little bit about why you just decided to structure it that way and how you solved that problem?
Right. Well, Ambire Adex is not a layer two solution per se.
Okay.
We are using a layer two solution for the payments and the impressions only. Just for the ad delivery.
Which one are you using? Which layer two?
A layer two solution that we came up ourselves, the Outpace payment channels.
Okay.
That I mentioned earlier.
Okay.
This is basically one to many payment channels to make sure that an advertiser can open a campaign and pay multiple publishers at the same time to have all the impressions settled in real time. And paid for in real time. And we're talking about the cost of that. And yes, right now, I mean, the Ambire Adex protocol is basically blockchain agnostic. But we have created an implementation, the platform that we are referring to, is the protocol implementation on Ethereum. And 5 years ago, it wasn't that costly. It was actually pretty cheap. I still remember the day we moved. I think we moved $100,000 from one wallet to another.
Oh my
God. And paid 2 cents, 2 cents for gas.
Wow.
And we did it just to highlight how cheap it is. Back then, that was a thing.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we were paying peanuts for gas back then, but we didn't
know. Those were the good old days. Enough.
I mean, yeah, but also there was no adoption, so I think that's why it was so cheap. So right now gas fees are an issue, and that's why we are basically using gas optimization techniques, and we're doing swipes on publisher accounts once a day to make sure that the publishers don't pay unnecessary fees to withdraw their earnings. So and we're also working on now that we also have Amber Wallet. And the wallet is going to have a dApp plugin system. So basically any dApp developers will be able to create a plugin and load their dApp straight inside Amber Wallet. And we are actually transitioning Amber Wallet from a standalone platform into such a plugin. And once we do that, it is going to be available on various blockchains as well. So advertisers and publishers will be able to select which layer one to choose for their settlement to optimize their fees and spending.
I love that. So who's using these wallets? Is it? It sounds like it's all enterprise at this point, and it was designed that way. Will stay that way.
It depends. When we're talking about the ad platform, it is mostly B2B. It's designed to serve either media outlets, bloggers, website owners on the publisher side, and any type of business, no matter how big or small, on the advertiser side. When it comes to Amber Wallet, it is very much usable as a multi-sig for companies. So it could be used as an enterprise solution, but it is mostly a B2C product. So it's designed to be used by crypto people, by degens, by Web3 savvy crowd, but also by our mothers or perhaps a 10-year-old child. I don't know.
So I want to ask you some more technical questions about Ambuyer, but let's take a little trip down memory lane before we do that and get into kind of the founding story. So how did you meet the founders? How did you meet the founding team? And like I said earlier, I want to talk about what you think the secret has been for, you know, because what you're building is really impressive and it requires a lot of teamwork and solid communication. So what do you think has been the magic ingredient to the success that you're having and what gives you the ability to keep going?
Well, I think that what basically glues the team together is the fact that we are all weirdos in everyone in their own way.
And I love that answer.
Yeah, and because each and every one of us is so weird, we're very accepting to other people's quirks, and we're very flexible.
Can we quote you on that? I feel like this is a really great social media graphic. Like,
please,
the secret is that we're just all unabashedly weird. Like, there.
And then again, the fact that we have been working together for so long. There's no way that you don't become friends with the people that you work with if you have spent the past 5 years together, right? So basically, we are kind of like a small family, maybe a little bit dysfunctional sometimes, but it just works.
Okay. And how did you all meet?
Oh, how did I? I mean, when I joined the company, there was already a team of about, I think, 5 people, and it was so funny and so weird. I was working a different job, where I was getting a little bit bored. I didn't have enough to do during my day and I couldn't find enough to, like, it was a complicated situation. But I saw a Facebook post about the team looking for a freelance copywriter and content creator. And I responded to that because I had the time and I had the brain power to do it. And that's how we got to know each other. And then a few months into that collaboration, so I actually started working for the company before I was officially on the payroll, like about a year before I was officially on the payroll. And they called me, the two co-founders called me one day to ask for a recommendation about somebody I knew. They were looking to hire them as a marketing manager. And I said, yes, he's fantastic. Hire him. Unfortunately, he turned them down. And a few weeks later, we met up to discuss ongoing tasks. And I asked them, hey, did you find the marketing manager did you find the right person for the job? They said, no, we didn't. We're getting a little bit frustrated with the whole hiring process. And I looked at them, and I know that it's weird, and a lot of women would be scandalized by what I did. But I just looked them in the eyes and said, why don't you hire me? And that's how it started. I literally asked them to hire me. I just went to them and I was like, oh, you should hire me because I can help you with this journey.
And what was their reaction?
And they were surprised. I don't think they expected it. But they just sat quiet for a couple of seconds there and they were like, actually, why not? Like, let's talk about that. Let's discuss. And we started talking.
At that point, how long had you been at the company?
I had been working for them for about a year at that point. Okay. But again, okay. I had only worked for them as a copywriter. They didn't even, like, they had never seen my resume. They didn't know that I had experience managing people, managing processes. So that's why they were a little bit skeptical at first. And then when we started talking about it, I was like, yeah, I'm actually qualified. That's how it got started. And it today it sounds a little bit crazy. But it worked out well.
Yeah, I think that what you're saying is can be an example to many women or anybody who feel as though they might not be qualified. You know, I've heard there's some statistic floating around social media that says that when men look at a job listing or a job posting or something, and they meet maybe half of the qualifications, you know, they're more likely to think to themselves, I can try it. You know, I can stretch myself and grow into this role, and they're more likely to take that leap. Whereas, you know, I don't know the statistics, but, you know, collectively and generally speaking, women tend to be more conservative and think, you know, well, maybe in a couple of years I'll have enough experience to meet, you know, all of the qualifications. We tend to expect to have to meet all of those qualifications before we are willing to stretch ourselves. But I think there's a lot to be said for putting yourself in a situation where, you know, you're stretching yourself into a growth role, you know, into a role that's requiring you to step up and embrace challenges and embrace new opportunities. I think there's a lot to be said for that. I don't find that scandalous at all. I find it admirable and necessary, you know, for growth.
A little bit. I mean, yeah, a lot of my friends reacted with surprise when I told them how I got hired by this up and coming company. And they were like, wait, isn't that a little bit too bold? And I was like, well, that's how you, like, I don't mean to sound braggy or overly arrogant, but I knew that I had what it took for the job. I knew that I could contribute. And the fact that I'm with the company 5 years later and so many more users later, it should be a testament to that. I'm sorry. This sounded so arrogant. I'm so sorry.
Not at all. Not at all. You're letting the data speak for itself. So let's talk about the data. Let's talk about, you know, like what have been the outcomes and the results that you've seen, and you know, what were those successes, you know, that validated your hunch? You know, you had an instinct, and what was the outcome?
Well, the first and biggest success in my career with Unbuyer so far was the crowdfunding campaign. Back when we did it, the recommended time for such a campaign was about 3 to 4 months, and the recommended budget was about $400,000. What we did is we cut the timeline to 30 days to a month of preparation, and then another month for the actual crowdfunding. And our budget was about, I think it was $30,000, so less than 10% of the recommended budget. We literally slept at the office for a few weeks to prepare everything and to make sure that everything is rolled out. Because again, back then the team was, I think, either 5 or 6 people, and not all of us were working on that crowdfunding campaign. So when the day of the event came and money started coming in, it was surreal. It was so, so weird to us that people were trusting us based on a white paper, based on the description of a dream of a better internet and a better ad tech industry. And I remember leaving.
Did you write the white paper?
I did write it together with our co-founders. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We wrote it together. So I remember leaving the office about 8 p.m., I think. And I was exhausted. And everything was underway. Things were under control. And I just said to the guys, look, I'm going home. I need to sleep a little bit. But I'm going to go to the mall and buy myself a new iPad on the way home to reward myself for a job somewhat done. And I was on my way to the mall when Ivo, one of the co-founders, called me and said, I don't know where you are, but I need you to stop and log in and publish info that the crowdfunding campaign is now done. It's over. We reached the hard cap within approximately 8 hours. We wanted to raise 40,000 Ether, and we raised them within 8 hours. And back then, 40,000 ETH was about $12 million, which was the largest amount of money that I had managed to get through crowdfunding in my career so far.
And wow.
We did it in a day. So to me, that was that is the success story that I'm going to tell my grandchildren one day.
Did you say $12 million?
Back then, yeah. Back then, I think one Ether was either $150 or $200 or $300. That was the range. I'm not even entirely sure. I should probably check that.
But so yeah, how does
raised
somebody
40,000?
That's amazing. Congratulations. And how does somebody rise to learn quickly how to handle that kind of money? Because I think that's probably a big learning curve that a lot of people in startups, and particularly in crypto startups, are going through. I mean, right now we're in this bear market, and a lot of people are saying it's a natural consequence of what we've seen for the last couple of years, where there's been VC money and these big ICOs and these big crowdfunding campaigns, and people are just handling massive amounts of money in some cases for the first time. So how did you essentially rise to be able to handle that with confidence and a kind of steady hand?
Well, our story is not really, should not be taken as an example, because we learned how to manage this amount of money because we were hacked. About a week after the crowdfunding campaign, we were hacked and our Multisig wallet was drained and the money was gone. It was just
all of
gonzo. All of it. To the last.
Oh my gosh.
To the last quay. It was just done.
And I'm getting sweating.
Yeah. And we hadn't even kind of like gotten to accept the fact that we have all this money, and we had lost it. And it turned out, fortunately, that there was a security vulnerability in the multi-sig type of wallet that we were using. And a group of white hat hackers noticed that wallets are getting drained. So they interfered and captured the money of a big number of projects that had raised money and were keeping money in the same type of wallet. So, but it was nerve-wracking. It was a roller coaster of emotions, because I think it was only 10 days later that we got a confirmation that our money was indeed seized by the white hat hackers.
Wow. And for those who don't know, why don't you explain what a white hat hacker is?
A white hat hacker is a hacker who has the technical expertise to hack, but uses that for good. So in this particular case, that white hat hacker group noticed that money is being drained, and they seized it temporarily. They kind of like kept it for us until the technical vulnerability was patched, and we were able to return the money to that wallet and use it again.
Now, did they patch it for you, or did they wait and observe until you patched it?
They basically, because we were using a third-party wallet, if I remember correctly, they worked with the wallet's team to patch, and then they wanted to have the code audited until they were sure that this is indeed patched, it is indeed fixed, and it's not going to happen again. So he volunteered time to help them audit the new release. And yeah, and this happened before a short period of a bull run, and things were going great, and we were feeling super crypto rich, like we were the kings and queens of the world. But then the crypto winter came, and because of that hack, because this has happened.
And what year was this? Was this like 2018?
2018, yeah. That was the crypto winter, but the actual hack was 2017. And because that hack had happened to us so early on, we had immediately implemented our plan to diversify the portfolio of the company. And we split our money into different digital assets combined with fiat. So this is actually one of the things, I mean, we were going to do it eventually, but it would have probably taken us, I don't know, maybe a few weeks to get to that. But we did it immediately because we were hacked. And this is the thing. It's a great story. I can't tell it enough because I know it sounds like a made up story, but it is what happened to us. And yeah, eventually this is what helped us survive the crypto winter of 2018, when projects were shutting down left, right, and center. People were being laid off. Some amazing tech was abandoned because the teams behind it didn't have the funding to continue working on it because, you know, bills have to be paid. And at that time, we were like that GIF of Leonardo DiCaprio from the Wolf of Wall Street, you know, like throwing money from a yacht or whatever. Yeah.
Oh my gosh! Wow! Like, so I understand what you mean now when you say that your team's a little bit dysfunctional, but because crypto is an emotional roller coaster, right? Crypto in and of itself, I think that's just the nature of the industry and being in a startup. It's a little bit dysfunctional in the sense that it's unpredictable and you don't know what to expect and things aren't going to work perfectly like a well-oiled machine all the time. So, but when you get through those things together, it's like you have this emotional bond that you're never going to experience with people. You just can't fake that kind of relationship after getting through something like that together.
Absolutely. And I think you're very right about the unpredictability of crypto. And I think that the biggest favor that one can do to themselves going into working into crypto and blockchain and Web3 is go into things expecting for things to not work out. Be prepared for the worst case scenario and then just enjoy it when things do actually work out in the end.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Well, I wish that we didn't have to end the conversation, but that was a good note to end it on, I think. I hope that we get to have you back at some point to tell us more about how things are developing. You know, there are still so many technical questions I'd love to ask about the wallet, but you know, where can listeners go to learn more about Ambier and the wallet and Ambier ADEX?
I would invite everybody who wants to learn more to visit our website, www.ambire.com. That's ambire.com. Or join our community on Telegram or Discord. People can also follow us on Twitter at Ambire Wallet, one word. And then, yeah, that's where they can learn a lot more.
Okay, amazing. Vanita, this was such a wonderful conversation. Hope to have you back soon. And I know you're about to go on vacation, so enjoy it. And yeah, we'll be in touch.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Once again, thank you for having me. It has been a real pleasure.
You've been listening to Masters of Web3, a Transact podcast. Stay connected with us by subscribing to the show, giving us a review, and sharing this episode with one of your friends on Twitter. We know you hang out there. If you like what you've heard, please rate the show. That helps us to keep delivering the best and latest stories on blockchain technology right to your ears. Thanks for listening. Until next time, this has been Masters of Web 3.